Hello, this is Chris with the Champagne News Gazette for Monday, October 14th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. The fabulous Gigi, Danville actress, model, fashionista, and activist for people with disabilities, wants to do everything, from Danville. A Danville woman and Down syndrome advocate realized one of her dreams recently when she guest starred on NBC's medical drama, New Amsterdam. Jalia Gigi Cunningham, 21, plays a young woman named Shante in an episode set to air on October 29th. I have a disability, but it doesn't stop me from doing anything I want, the 2018 Danville High School graduate said, breaking into a grin. Shortly after returning from a whirlwind trip to New York City where she filmed the episode, Cunningham and her mother Erica Taylor sat down over cocoa and smoothies at Mad Goat Coffee to talk about the aspiring model and actress's first acting job. Cunningham began gaining a following on social media in 2015 after walking the runway in the Be Beautiful, Be Yourself fashion show at the Colorado Convention Center. The show is the Global Down Syndrome Foundation's largest fundraiser in the U.S. and has raised millions for research, medical care, advocacy, education, and widespread awareness for the alarming disparity of funding for people with Down syndrome while successfully emphasizing their abilities. The next year, she was featured in a documentary by Attitude Pictures, a New Zealand-based TV production company specializing in programs relating to disability. The documentary follows the then 17-year-old demonstrating her modeling skills, eating dinner with her family, going to school, and on a date, and taking some test shots at the Helen Wells Agency in Indianapolis. In August, Taylor received an email out of the blue from a casting director in Los Angeles. Would Cunningham be interested in auditioning for a role, and could she send them a script? Upon receiving it, Cunningham memorized the lines, then performed them while her mom took a video on her phone. Then Taylor emailed the video to the casting director. A couple of days later, Taylor received another email, this one from Carolina's Casting in New York City, followed by a call from agency president David Caporelli. He said he watched the documentary and showed everyone on the set, and they just fell in love with her. Now in its second season, the hit show follows the lives of Dr. Max Goldwyn, played by Ryan Eggold, and his colleagues at New Amsterdam, the oldest public hospital in the U.S. To prepare for her role, Cunningham caught up on the season one episodes, and she practiced lines with 14-year-old brother Makai Taylor, a DHS freshman, stepdad Michael Taylor, and other relatives reading the other parts. He really liked her personality and he wanted her to be as natural as possible, Taylor said of Caporelli. He even allowed her to critique the script and portray her character in a way that reflected her own words and emotions. Cunningham met executive producer and director Peter Horton of 30-something fame and the regular cast and guest actors at a table read. That's when the cast reads through the entire script together. Gigi was able to read all of her lines. The filming took place over several days in a studio and at other locations. The show put Cunningham up in a nice hotel and sent a car to take her to and from the set. She also had a personal assistant and acting coach whose siblings have Down syndrome, plus a wardrobe stylist, hairdresser, and makeup artist. On the days Cunningham reported to the set, she had a short rehearsal. Once they got everything down, they would roll film, Taylor said, adding that they filmed until they got the shots they needed, which made for some very long days. It was very interesting to see, she continued, of filming. They make it look so easy, but there are many people and everyone's got a job to do. When Cunningham wasn't needed, she and her mom could kick back in her own trailer or dressing room. And while in the Big Apple, they, along with one of Cunningham's personal support workers from home, got to take in some of the sights, including Times Square, Chinatown, the Empire State Building, and Freedom Tower. A self-proclaimed fashionista, Cunningham also did some shopping, though mainly to get souvenirs for everyone back home, including a Brooklyn t-shirt for Makai, one of her biggest supporters. No one is allowed to discuss the plot until it airs. However, on September 25th, Horton tweeted a photo of himself and Cunningham with this caption: "The fabulous Gigi Cunningham, who plays Shantae. This girl is talented and will break your heart." Diana Elizabeth Jordan tweeted back, "So excited to see this episode for a very special reason. Appreciate New Amsterdam's commitment to authentic casting of artists with disabilities, stocking up on the tissues already." Taylor was proud of her daughter's performance and the way she interacted with the cast and crew. Before she left the taping, everyone knew who she was. She'd say, "Hello, how are you?" to everyone. Everyone said they were touched by her presence. And Peter was amazing. He was very welcoming and patient with her. He didn't treat her any differently. She was one of the cast members, and that's what I loved about him the most. Taylor's not sure whether this will lead to more acting opportunities. For her personally, it was a great experience, and we feel very grateful and blessed for her to have this opportunity. She really enjoys acting and would like to challenge herself more. She can follow scripts well, and she has a sharp memory. The way I look at it is if God blesses her with something else, we'll take a look at it and evaluate it to see if it's something that would be good for her to pursue. Back home, Cunningham is planning a viewing party at Danville's Palmer Arena, which is open to the public. A meet and greet will be held at 8 p.m. ahead of the viewing at 9. Cunningham continues to work on various life skills, such as getting around town and trying out different recipes. She's also working on her many other goals. "I want to go to college. I want to get my driver's license. I want to be a fashion designer. I want to get my own house. I want to be a model. I want to be a musical artist," said Cunningham, who also speaks out against bullying on social media. "She wants to do everything," Taylor said with a laugh, "and I encourage her to try everything. Ultimately, it's about what makes her happy. She pretty much can do anything she puts her mind to, and I'll support her. She inspires a lot of people by just being herself and touches them in a way that's indescribable, and that makes me happy." Also on the front page from those who served, "Europe was scary amid Cuban crisis," from Tuscola. Thomas Bennett served in the Army Security Agency during tense times in the Cold War, including the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. In Rantoul, he ran track and played football for the Eagles. It was a natural step to move on to the University of Illinois, but not a successful one at first. Bennett, now 79, studied accountancy, one of the tougher programs. "I was not mature enough to be motivated," he said. Instead, he enlisted because he knew he was going to be drafted. He had enjoyed ROTC. "I tried the Air Force recruiter because I grew up around the Chanute Air Force Base. They were not welcoming at all. So the Army offered a 3-year enlistment, and I took it." His boot camp was Missouri's Fort Leonard Wood. "It was very snowy and very cold in February. They said it ought to be called Little Korea. The barracks were heated by coal." After advanced training that took a difficult 6 months, his ears, trained from boyhood in Morse code, made him valuable for surveillance work. "I trained in international Morse code for the Army Security Agency, as well as electronic surveillance." He arrived in Germany in 1960, just ahead of his 21st birthday. "It was an interesting trip," he said. "This plane had engine trouble over the Atlantic, and we landed in the Azores. Later, over Germany, the helicopter he was in developed trouble. We had to get to the ground quickly. It was a cow pasture, and the pilot said the cows had to get out of the way." Bennett was stationed near the city of Kassel in central Germany. Soviet forces were not far away, so NATO kept a clear eye on the borders, and Bennett felt good being part of that. "I always enjoyed learning new equipment, and sometimes that could mean close quarters. A 2.5-ton truck hut could hold a radio transmitter and receivers, two teletypes, and staff. A smaller trailer might just hold one person." When his unit worked in larger huts, there were a couple of fans, not particularly for our comfort, but to keep the electronics cool. There was quite a number of vacuum tubes, and they put out a lot of heat. Any travel near a border could be perilous. In early 1961, the Soviets started monkeying with the autobahns, and civilians were told don't stop for any reason because they would think you were a spy. It was your own fault if you got caught. The missile crisis of 1962 was far away in Cuba, But troops in Europe were worried that it could escalate into full war with the most advanced weapons in history. That was fairly scary. Kennedy had to go toe-to-toe with Khrushchev. And then there were the Soviets, who would have loved to take all of Germany in the first place. Everyone knew about mutual assured destruction. Bennett was never shot at, but I could hear the Soviets advance in tanks. We were told if there was tank maneuvering, we might just see dust coming up, but it rained all the time. It was a standoff. Containment was the idea. If we weren't going to try to match every gun, we'd just hold our own. But if they want to try anything, we'd hurt them badly. He could have stayed in. A three-striped sergeant could have a career. After leaving the service, Bennett worked about a year, then enrolled in Eastern Illinois University as things were heating up in Vietnam. Bennett studied history along with Russian and German, so he was thinking about joining the National Security Agency or a Foreign Service career. He eventually joined State Farm Insurance and worked there from 1967 to 1997, transferring finally to Tuscola. But Bennett couldn't stay retired. He worked a custodial job for a while, then took a job as a bailiff at the Douglas County Courthouse, where he still puts in a few hours. And from Urbana, Scouts Honor, Dukeman, a quasi-troop leader to many. First Busey CEO honed skills in Arthur Troop 74. He didn't make it all the way to Eagle Scout, but Van Dukeman picked up a handy skill or two while a youngster in Arthur's Boy Scout Troop 74. My wife always says, "You start a fire better than anybody I've ever been around." And I learned it in Scouts. I really did. One of the things I learned was I can start a fire with wet wood. The one-time Weblo Scout turned First Busey CEO will be presented Thursday with the local Boy Scouts' highest honor, the Prairie Lands Council's Distinguished Citizen Award. Dukeman is recipient number 5, joining a list that also includes Lou Henson, Kyle and Phyllis Robeson, the Adkins family, and Laura and Sandra Libman. The honor goes to community members whose life and accomplishments mirror the lessons and values learned through scouting, Councilmember Kyle Keitzman said. Dukeman was at the top of our list based on his experience as a scout, support of the local council, and mission of scouting through Busey Bank and commitment to family and serving others by mentoring young people. He's also an active citizen in our community who serves and supports numerous organizations in addition to his professional accomplishments and leadership skills. Growing up in Arthur, Dukeman was a Boy Scout for about 6 years. So strong was the connection he made with his fellow scouts, four of them wound up serving as groomsmen in his wedding. "We had an active troop, and I enjoyed the experience," Dukeman said. "It's people that have been friends for a lifetime." Being a scout led to new experiences like all of the camping trips he went on. It was one of the first times you really spent any time away from home. Among the most memorable adventures, a trip to the iconic Quantico Provincial Park in northwestern Ontario, Canada, just north of Minnesota. You had to be at least a first-class rank in scouting, so it was some of the older kids in the troop. We canoed up there and had to portage in some spots. Looking back now, Dukeman realizes how much he learned from his scouting experience, even if he didn't realize it at the time. "You learned a lot of leadership. You might start out as a tenderfoot, but then maybe you become an assistant patrol leader, senior patrol leader," and he also learned how to adapt. "I remember one camp. We were prepared to go, but it's a weekend where it's just pouring down rain and the whole weekend, so it's impossible to start a fire. So how are we going to eat, and what are we going to do?" So you learn to adapt to circumstances that maybe were unforeseen. Experiences like that taught him to pay attention to the Boy Scout motto, "Be prepared." For the next time, you're a little bit more prepared for those kinds of situations. Dukeman went to the University of Illinois, and while there in the late 1970s, he worked for Busey's Computer Center. In a stretch working in Houston, he returned to Busey. After a stretch working in Houston, he returned to Busey in 1986. 7 years later, he left to become president of the Bank of Illinois. That bank would later become Main Street Bank and Trust, and when it merged with First Busey in 2007, Dukeman was appointed CEO. In his time leading the organization, Dukeman has guided First Busey through a recession and expansion, which included acquisitions in the Peoria, St. Louis, and Chicago markets. Throughout his career, Dukeman said his scouting experience has served him well. We're a team, and we work toward common goals, adapting to circumstances that present themselves that you don't expect, a strong work ethic. Over time, these things were part of a building block. His associates say Dukeman is certainly deserving of the honor. Van, in a very supportive way, challenges those around him to be the best versions of themselves, said Bob Bulstrode, Executive Managing Director of Busey Wealth Management. Van's approach to most situations is consistent with the Scout motto of being prepared. Van is a quasi-troop leader to many of us. Long before he was named University of Illinois Athletic Director, Josh Whitman, then an Illini tight end, interned at Busey. A big Dukeman fan, Whitman will be among the speakers at Thursday's ceremony. As I've gotten a chance to collaborate and work with him closely over the last 3.5 years now, I couldn't have been more impressed with who he is, not just as a leader, but as an individual. His integrity, his vision, his willingness to collaborate and to think for the bigger picture are all admirable attributes. I think he is always keeping his values where they belong. He really cares about this community. Dukeman said he doesn't like the spotlight, but was happy to accept this particular honor. I'm a little uncomfortable having my name on that, but probably the main reason I did it is I do think the scouting program here, the Prairie Lands Council, does a great job with young people. It was good for me, and I know that they impact positively on a lot of young people. Also from Urbana, classically restored through many renovations, that old-world Italian Renaissance charm remains alive and well in Carl Park's Pavilion. The Carl Park Pavilion is the first thing you see when you enter this 8.3-acre park. It's a classic stone structure that reflects its time. The two-story Italian Renaissance Revival-style pavilion is a century old. When there were no TV sets or digital devices to keep people home, they enjoyed the outdoors, even if the outdoors were a little tame at local parks. Many renovations over the years have been made to clean up after vandals. It sits between Urbana High School and the Urbana side of the University of Illinois halls and apartments. But in many of its renovations, artisans have tried to keep to its original style. The pavilion is paired with an English oak listed as the tallest in the state and second tallest in the nation. According to an award from the Preservation and Conservation Association, the pavilion was constructed of Indiana Bedford limestone at the cost of about $14,000. But costs do tend to go up. More than 20 years ago, a rehabilitation effort cost $100,000, only one of many. A renovation finished in 2012 took another $270,000. In 1993, a large rehabilitation effort took place, PACA noted. In 2008, the Urbana Park District initiated a park master plan to update it. The hand-forged decorative gates produced and installed by working metal artist Dean Rose were designed by Scott Watcher, the president of IGW Architecture, to complement and reflect the ornamentation and details of the original design. They're often called wrought iron gates, but they're actually steel with a powder finish. Watcher based the design on original details of the edifice still to be seen, including reproducing the Greek key repetitive decorations on the walls. And the gates do open. The space inside has been used for weddings and other events, said Derek Liebert, the Urbana Park District Superintendent of Planning and Operation. But the upper level is closed. A young man jumped off it a few years ago and broke his ankle in several places. The pavilion was financed by a bequest from the estate of Margaret Carl Morris, who also had donated the land for the park. The park's donation was a condition for the 30-acre land sale to Dr. C.L. Van Doren, according to the Park District history. Van Doren sold 6 lots in their subdivision to the Park District, completing the park's configuration. The plan was for a new subdivision aimed at well-to-do residents who would want to be close to Urbana High School, just built with a design by famed architect Joseph Royer, who did so many public buildings here, including the nearby courthouse. Liebert said the trees are an important part of the park, and he praised the landscape plan developed by Parks Commissioner J.C. Blair in 1919. There are more than 50 trees on the Hickman Tree Walk, which is being updated. Besides Carl Park, the district is involved in a number of new and ongoing landscape projects. Crystal Lake Rehabilitating has a number of landscape components. We are also working on a new landscape plan at the Wendell Sculpture Garden and the Hickman Wildflower Walk. The landscape plans at Meadowbrook are nearing completion, and the Leal Park trees are scheduled for this fall. We are planting trees at Leal Park as well. Statues don't move, but people move them. Laredo Taft Lincoln, the lawyer, was dedicated July 3, 1927, at the Urbana Lincoln Hotel, then relocated to Carl Park. Like the pavilion, it has been the target of vandals, including a paint job that came off with soap and water. It was a gift from Mary Cunningham. She and her husband, Judge Joseph Cunningham, were friends of Abraham Lincoln from his wide-ranging work on the 8th Judicial Circuit. Another statue of Women's Christian Temperance Union founder Frances Willard used to stand east of the pavilion facing Urbana High School, according to the Park District's website. The statue was later moved to the main Springfield intersection triangle in front of the historic Flatiron Building, which burned down in 1948. People used a fountain there to cool beer, the story goes. Apparently, Prohibition had done its damage to Willard's standing. Ignominiously, the statue was melted into scrap metal during World War II, wrote Elina Mokasi and Dennis Roberts in their book Urbana Images of America. The Hickman Tree Walk takes you past what is the largest English oak in Illinois, located just a few yards southeast of the pavilion. Liebert said shade trees were planted at the time of a land gift in 1909. In 1919, Parks Commissioner Joseph C. Blair developed a landscape plan for the park, and more tree planting took place. The oak by the pavilion remains the king. Safe to say it's approximately 100 feet tall, said Liebert, and 10.9 feet in diameter at last measure 6 years ago. Proposal would set rules for planned distillery. No ordinances in place yet for such businesses from Champaign. Scott Cochran has been planning to add a distillery to his Midtown Crossing development along with a brewery and restaurant, but the city's ordinances make no mention of distilleries. I asked the city to look into it for me, Cochran said. They don't know if I needed it and weren't sure how to handle it. To clarify the situation, the Champaign Plan Commission will take up the matter at its meeting Wednesday. A city proposal would allow distilleries and micro-distilleries to be built in commercial or industrial zones. Such businesses would be allowed to have a tasting room. A distillery would be defined as a facility where grains and or fruits are distilled into spirituous liquor, and a micro distillery wouldn't be allowed to produce more than 50,000 proof gallons per year. Proof gallons are a measurement of a spirit's alcohol concentration in proportion to its liquid volume, where a gallon of 100 proof vodka would be equivalent to one proof gallon, while a gallon of light beer would be far less. Craft alcohol in general is a growing trend that started with breweries, and we thought it was the right time to update the code, Associate Planner Tina Armstrong said. According to the American Craft Spirits Association, the number of active craft distilleries in the U.S. grew by 15% between 2016 and 17 to 1,835 distilleries, she wrote in her report to the commission. The craft distilling industry sold nearly 7.2 million cases in 2017, up 23% in volume over 2016. For small craft distilleries, direct sales at the micro distilleries account for a whopping 40% of total sales. If the Commission recommends approval of the proposal, the Champaign City Council would take up the issue November 5th. Cochran said he's still working on his Midtown Crossing project. Last year, the City Council approved $300,000 in redevelopment grants for the $1.67 million project, which Cochran's company would receive once it's complete. Last month, the Council approved an extension for these grants, giving Cochran until the end of 2020 to complete the project if he gets started by July 1, 2020. We're working, said Cochran, who's also busy with winding down the Campus Town Bar CAMS by October 20th and ramping up construction of the new one at First and Green Streets. Hundreds brave rain for Butkus statue unveiling. Underneath a tarp that protected him from a sprinkle of rain, Josh Whitman looked out at the crowd in front of him at the entrance of the Henry Dale and Betty Smith Football Performance Center and marveled. The hundreds in attendance, some of whom sat or stood behind the barricades on 4th Street, braved the wet and cold temperatures in the low 40s to witness the unveiling of the new statue of Dick Butkus. "Wow, what an incredible scene," the Illinois Athletic Director said. "I wish you all had the chance to see what we have a chance to see sitting up here right now. We're so happy, despite the weather, to have everybody here. I think it speaks who Dick is to this university, to his community, and certainly to this football program." Sculptor George Lundeen clutched onto one side of the tarp covering the statue, struggling to hold on in the wind, even as one bronze hand was revealed. Whitman joked that the first thing Butkus said to him when he told of plans of the statue was that he didn't want it because it separated him from his teammates. The legendary Illini linebacker told media before the unveiling that he didn't make the process easy. But as the statue was set to be revealed, the 76-year-old Butkus was highly complimentary of his likeness, which will grace the entrance of the Smith Center in perpetuity. "I gotta tell you, this statue is the best, don't you think? I've got to say that sculptor George Lundeen did a magnificent job." And from Washington, acting DHS secretary resigns his post. President Donald Trump said Friday that Kevin McAleen was stepping down as the acting secretary of Homeland Security. Trump said Aladeen wants to spend more time with family and go to the private sector. "We have worked together well with border crossings being way down," Trump tweeted. Mulkeen said in a subsequent tweet that he wanted to thank the president for his support and he'd work with the Department of Homeland Security on a smooth transition. He took over in April after Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen quit. He was the fourth person to lead the department in 2 years. We'll take a short break now, return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 14th. Please stay tuned.